Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, hello. Welcome back. Falling Forward with Dan Lasak. That's me. Episode 15. Nervous laugh in there. Don't know why. Just threw it in. It might be a bit rambunctious today. There's rambunctious children doing rambunctious things surrounding my house. I've not done anything wrong. They're out there playing. They're unaware of my existence. But yes, so if you hear screaming, don't phone the police. Or do. It's up to you. But yes, welcome back. Hope you're doing very well. Hope it's a nice Tuesday morning for you all. And yes, I know you all listen to Falling Forward the day it drops. I can understand that. It's very good. It's a very good podcast. And today, we've got a very good guest. The important broadcaster himself, the Yes Man, the cult leader, Danny Wallace, who you've heard from those things I just referenced a moment ago in the intro there, and Radio X. No, I already referenced that. He's done a lot, and I shouldn't have to recount it all. You all have the internet. You can Google the name Danny Wallace and find out all about him yourselves. I don't even know why you're listening to this podcast. It seems excessive to have Google and then also listen to one-on-one, long-form, unedited interviews. That's not how I describe the podcast normally. That's just me trying to sound clever. But yeah, really, really enjoyed this one. I came away from it. I was walking through the streets of that London with an additional spring in my step. And that lasted for at least 45 minutes until I looked at Twitter. And then that sucked all life and positivity out of my soul. But you know what? 45 minutes? I'll take it. We had a lovely chat about his most recent book, F You Very Much, which deals with rudeness, but in a very polite way. I advise you to read or listen to the book. Listen to the audiobook. If you purchase the physical book and just listen to it, you may not get a particularly exciting experience. But yes, that's coming up momentarily. I notice we get new listeners with each guest. Each guest brings some of their followers with them. And it's nice, but I always forget to plug everything that's come before it. So, Danny's friends and followers, this podcast is just conversations with creators about stuff. I could have thought of a better synopsis than that, but that's the truth. And the truth's important. So if you dig further back, we've got DJ Yoda in there. We've got the pornographer, Stoya, chiptune artist, Chipsel, another radio broadcaster from BBC called Matt Everett. So I don't know with Danny being Radio X, I don't know if there's some sort of turf war there. But you might want to hear what the enemy sounds like. I don't know. But yes, go dig and have a little listen to those. You'll enjoy them. Also, it's very unedited. Very unedited. Like the least amount of editing I could get away with without sounding stupid. So don't expect the slickness right here. You know, it's gonzo podcasting. although that makes it sound dirtier than it really is. And everyone, be aware that we recorded this in the bar, the Queen of Hoxton. They were very polite enough to let me use a space, but through a series of miscommunications, we ended up in the loudest room of all time. Hopefully, I've used some audio magic and trickery so that it doesn't sound too bad, but there are some thundering door slams, a delightful hum of a air conditioning unit, and a high-pitched squeak that I could not really place. So hopefully that won't be too distracting for you, or hopefully I haven't overprocessed it and made us sound like robots. Also, thank you to the Patreons of Patreon. This podcast is brought to you by Patreon. Well, not the company Patreon, by people who use my page within Patreon to support the podcast. I don't know if you know how all this works, but I take money from people. They push it into my E-G string as I gyrate my podcast hips in your face. And yes, I then spend that money on the oil that is more podcasts. I think that analogy works. So thank you, everyone who does that. If you are interested, jump over to patreon.com/DanLasak. And then you can rub oil on me. I don't know where I was going with that. Also, the music you can hear right now is on danlasak.bandcamp.com. It's totally free. Pay what you want, basically. So just take it for free. Everyone else does, don't they? Don't they? Music's got no value anymore. Yeah. Oh, wait, that's bad. Anyway, really hope you enjoyed this one. Hang about at the end if you want to hear who's on next week. And just open your ears for myself and Danny Wallace in the basement of Queen of Hoxton talking about things, because that's what podcasts are.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This is as quickly as possible. Did I write notes for you? Yes!
No. And some notes.
Thank God. Well, Danny, you sort of have to write notes for you.
Do you?
You've done a lot.
Done a lot of different things. Keep moving around.
Like, I didn't realise.
Is that right?
I think I've only followed a few of your tendrils.
Right, yeah.
Your career tendrils. So obviously I knew nothing of the children's books, because I don't frequent children.
Good, I'm glad.
Yeah, now that's the right phrase. But, yeah, so you've, in the last 20 years, how many books have you read?
How many books in the last 20 years? I suppose maybe around 16 or 17, something like that.
16 or 17.
I think so, including the kids' books, I believe.
They count, though.
They're books.
They still get printed. Okay, so that's 15. Then you've had various radio shows.
Yeah.
And podcasts. And like a tiny movie thing with Jim Carrey. And
yes.
And Zooey Deschanel.
That's right.
although she's probably the more popular of the Deschanels.
Oh, yeah.
I would say Emily Deschanel is more the thinking man's Deschanel.
Any Deschanel will do.
Any
that's
do.
Always been my my family crest.
She's that must great. Have been awkward to explain when you met her. Like, is that my name on your family crest?
Yeah, it was a bit.
And why are you wearing a blazer with your family crest on?
She, you know, she's very accepting. She's a very accepting woman. That's the thing about Deschanels. They're very, very accepting. She was great fun, actually. Just really, I mean, exactly as she is kind of on film.
I've seen her band.
Yeah.
Years ago now. But, yeah, I expected something else for some reason. I was thinking, I don't know. I've seen a few sort of actor bands, and usually there's a tonal shift in the way they are.
Mm-hmm.
But she was just like, oh, no, that's that. That woman off that TV show.
Yeah, she seems like someone who can just stand up and just do whatever is required.
Yeah.
But it always, you know, it's still just her.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is quite nice.
Yeah. But to have done so much, why do more?
Well, it's a good question. Sometimes I don't want to. Sometimes I mow the grass. And it's very odd, right, when I mow the grass, because I love mowing the grass.
Mm.
And it's because I always need to be doing something, and something that feels useful in some way. Something that is, you know, I should be sort of relaxing, but I always just want to do the next thing, but to try and do it well. And I've realised that, you know, as I get older and slower, even though, you know, I'm 42, but, you know, I do, I'm feeling older now. If I mow the grass like an old man, I'm still doing something.
Yeah.
I still want to do it well, but I still feel like I'm being useful somehow to the universe, but, you know, to those around me.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, I don't know. I've always just had that urge to just crack on, to feel like the clock is ticking. And I'm not having fun unless I'm creating something.
And you've said that before, that you're, most of the things you've done in your life have been just, I'm looking for the fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's so key to it. So key to, if you're going to create anything, it has to be something that excites you.
Mm.
Otherwise, you're committing yourself to 6 months or a year of doing something that doesn't matter, because it doesn't matter to you.
Yeah.
So why should it matter to anyone else? So if it matters to you, then maybe it'll strike a chord or chime with other people.
And you... Striking chords is, like, especially when you look back at Stupid Boy projects, you struck a chord multiple times. Like, with Join Me, you obviously it says on the cover that you accidentally started a cult, but I think if someone hadn't read that, they wouldn't realise that that's what came out of Join Me is something that's still happening today.
Yeah.
You know, we're coming up on what? Is it the 20th anniversary?
What would it be?
Carmageddon?
Surely like around 18 or something like that.
And
Carmageddon, when all the people kind of get together who met through Join Me, this thing I started. I didn't have a real plan. I didn't know where it would end up. I didn't know if it would work.
Mm.
And it became like a snowball. You know, that classic thing of someone rolling a ball of snow, then you get to a hill, and then it's just off.
Mm.
It's just like a car out of control. And I'm running behind it, trying to not stop it, but trying to still have some guidance over it, because it picked up so quickly.
Yeah. So that basically, for those who don't know, that was basically you placed an ad with the words, join me and send a passport photo to this address.
Yeah.
You didn't know why they were doing it.
I didn't know why they were doing it. I didn't know why they would do it, but I wanted to find out if they would, and therefore why they did.
Yeah.
And they did. And I wanted to see whether people would join something without knowing who they were joining or what they were joining or just anything about it. Whether we hunger after this stuff. And this was pre-Facebook and pre-Twitter, obviously, before you could just join anything, before you could click a button to sign a petition. You had to do stuff.
Well, the weird thing about that is, like, I make things for a living, but they all rely on someone clicking just a link to hear it. And it's hard enough to get them just to click that link.
Yeah.
It's like, what, I've got to leave Twitter. Yeah. I had a conversation with someone on Instagram yesterday, him saying, yeah, where's the link? And you can't post links on Instagram.
Right.
And I was like, well, this one in my bio.
Yeah.
And he was like, yes, that's a lot of clicks.
Yeah.
And, I said, I did 3 days research and flew to America and then interviewed the person, then edited it and then flew back. But no, I totally understand. You don't want to click a link.
Yeah, I know. It's made everything easy and made us all so, you know, so lazy. Yeah. I'll get things going like, how do I get your book? And obviously you want to write back and say, well, you could Google that or go to a place that sells books. You know, you must have heard of them.
Well, the silly thing is if they had, instead of said it to you, just said it to Google, how do I get Danny Wallace's book? Google would have been all over it. They would have given them too many options.
I think you're right. But very often it's about the interaction. They want the interaction.
Yeah.
And also you feel bad if you don't give them that interaction, because then you're not kind of doing your job in the kind of reader, author sort of the weird contract, you know. And I love the people that read the books, and if they come up to me on the street and they say they've read one of the books, as soon as I know what book it is, it already feels like there's a connection there, like we've sat down.
Do you feel like they know a version of you?
Mm-hmm.
And especially now, when, like, if someone came up to you talking about Yes Man or Jeremy, that's a version of you that you've probably moved on from.
Mm.
Does that interaction sometimes feel awkward? Like they're talking to a Danny that's 15 years younger?
I don't know, because I know that Danny, and he's still me.
Yeah.
But there are different versions of me. There always have been, because you have to have, you know, you have to have like the joy in your heart and the optimism to want to go out and do these things and to meet these people and to be excited by it. Like I was saying earlier, it's got to drive you, and that's going to be the main thing. But then there's also the you that, you know, when you're writing it, you have to be a bit dispassionate as well and go, is this interesting to these people? Does it need that bit or does it not? And then you also have to have like a bit of a marketing head and think, is this the right thing for, you know, the next book to be or whatever? And then there's the one where you're sort of out and about, or the guy on the stage where you have to talk about it entertainingly, or the person talking about it seriously with a journalist. So there are lots and lots of different versions. There are of all of us. It's just that with these different things that I've done and these different sort of career paths, you have to find the right way of doing each one.
Mm.
So, you know, a radio show, I'll adapt my persona a bit and play up on one aspect of it. And then that becomes
the XFM show at the moment, your tone is different. It's more, it's more grandiose.
Yeah.
A little bit more.
Yeah. You know. I'm setting up a world for people to get into. Mm. A lot of it is setting up worlds, you know? So Join Me was a world. The escapades that people who read and enjoy and get and do their own stuff with Yes Man is a different thing. When I started my own country for BBC Two, that was its own world with its own kind of rules. And the radio show, I think if you want to kind of get people along for an appointment, right? So they want to hear the next episode of that weekly show. You create that world. And so, yeah, so with that one, the idea is it's almost like a Kim Jong-un style state, except with jokes. And I treat the listener badly if they do not respect me.
Yeah.
If they respect me and they show their deference to me, then we can crack on. But then we'll also just talk about, you know, normal things that happen every day, like cooking and it going wrong or whatever.
Like, but like when someone sends in an image of their listening space.
Their listening chamber. I encourage them to have a dedicated listening space.
Yes.
And they listen in silence. And if they have a listening partner, they must stare the listening partner in the eye the whole way. They can talk through the music. Doesn't matter. That's not why they're there. That's their free time. When I talk, that's not their free time. That's their education time. It's that sort of thing. And if you do it right, then the moment you know you've done it right is when you get the texts in or the emails, and they are not mimicking, they've taken the sort of the vernacular and the style of the show, and that is how they write. So they might use the word betwixt instead of between.
Yeah.
And it's great when that starts to happen.
Yeah.
Because you realise you've hit it.
Well, it's funny, because I try to do all my research just before I sit down.
Sure.
It would be silly to do it 6 months ago. I would have forgotten things. And I sort of stopped, had a little break yesterday evening about 7 o'clock, and my friend Leah, She'd just been sent a care package of biscuits and tea from one of her viewers on. She's on Twitch.
Oh yeah.
And I found myself slightly offended by a McVitie's Orange Club.
Oh, why?
Because the mint.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's
and when
true.
You've got a far superior mint chocolate like, club existing, why would you buy the orange?
Yeah.
And it weirdly, not quite channeling you, but I had a moment of I felt I needed to express
that. Good for you.
There was a thoughtfulness in this person's gift, but
they
had undermined themselves.
Yeah, a thoughtlessness accompanied it.
Yeah,
No, you're right.
They say the thought that counts, but this was thoughtless.
Yeah, because if you respect someone, you give them the mint, because the mint, it's clean, it's cleansing. It's almost like a chocolate toothbrush. whereas the orange, of course, it's there for a dirtier experience.
I think the orange is a guiltier experience.
Yeah.
This is the last chocolate you have in the house.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But the odd thing was instantly people replied in that time.
Correct.
You know?
Yeah.
And then it was just like, and it was funny because I haven't really enjoyed Twitter for a little while. Obviously, it's a little difficult place.
Yeah, it is now,
at times. And because I'm a little bit political, I follow a lot of political people, so I'm being barraged by that. And then
the Farage barrage.
The Farage barrage. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, I remember now.
Yeah,
I'm talking about wagon wheels.
These things happen, these brilliant moments where you're just reminded of the world as it was 10 years ago. And obviously there were huge injustices 10 years ago and there was terrible stuff going on, but it was just simpler and nicer. And it was just a set of rules that we all seemed to understand.
Yeah, you didn't have people coming up to you on the street to tell you why they disliked you. They did that quietly to their friends. Mm-hmm. It's that thing of, I really didn't like Dan Lussac's album. Is it an acceptable thing to say? I really didn't like at Dan Lussac's album.
No.
That doesn't need to exist.
Don't need to do that. You don't need to do that.
I don't
that.
Need to know that you have no taste. You know?
But it's also, why would you do that to someone? Why, you know, there's so many rules that we're still learning because it is still so young and so fresh and it is a process of evolution. And you have to suffer, sadly, having those things where you are tagged in so that others in the future may live a life where they can just go about their business and check social media and not be tagged into some, you know, dickhead's rant. But I always find that very sort of classless and thoughtless and lacking in empathy. And also it's an attention thing, I suppose, because everyone now has to have an opinion on everything all the time, whether they really care about it or not. But it's that enforcing your opinion. It's like a power move. It's a saying, I am superior. And if you then say to that person, do you know what, you don't have to include me on that, you're like a sensitive dickhead. And they've got the upper hand. Whereas they're the person insulting you. It makes no sense. So just know that your suffering is so that future Lussacs can go about their business.
I'm glad I'm helping the future Lussacs.
Yeah.
But you talk about this, obviously, your most recent book almost is a Stupid Boy project, but not quite. It's a different kind of, it's a more responsible boy project.
Yeah, I didn't want to leave behind the people who like the stuff, so I wanted it to sort of chime with the rest. But it is a different book. It's a different approach. And it's me, you know, a bit older with a few kids looking at the world. And an incident happened.
When was your first kid born?
9 years ago.
9 years ago. What year are we in?
We are in end of 2009.
Okay.
Oh, what year are we in now? We're in 2019.
So 2009. Because is it like, I'm going to come, loop. We'll loop back. But you sort of notice the boy projects obviously stop.
Yeah.
And then you have friends like these, which happens just before, where maybe you're looking back before you move on.
Yeah.
And then it's the responsible stuff, the novels.
That's when I have kids.
Exactly there.
Yeah, it is. So friends like these were still a sort of like a stupid boy project in that, I was hitting 30 and I was looking back. And then it was like, well, all these people from my past, because I moved around a lot, they're all still wandering about, you know. They've been through the same things as I have in the time that I haven't seen them, sometimes, you know, 25 years, some of them. they'll have hit milestones at the same time as me. Maybe gone to university, maybe not. Maybe learned to drive a car, maybe not. So why don't I catch up with them? But instead of doing it in this way that we all do now, by tagging them in disrespectfully,
yeah.
Why don't I go wherever they are in the world, knock on their door, face to face, like face to Facebook, and just say, are you coming out to play? Because I wanted to get back to that. Even then, I wanted to sort of get back to, you know, the way it used to be. A little bit. It seems like the more technological advancement there is, the more society changes, the more you kind of hanker for what you grew up on, in a sense.
And when you see someone face to face, you don't have time to think about, or you are thinking about what you're saying, but you don't have that, oh, okay, then I'm going to phrase this in a particular way, yeah. I'm gonna filter things out. You make mistakes. You say things wrong, but it's you learn a hell of a lot more.
Oh yeah, and you find that you click back into that groove that you had. If you were a really good friend with someone, then if you're someone who can just skip over any awkwardness for a little bit, you find yourself clicking back into that groove, and it becomes like the needle in the vinyl. And you talk about the old days, and you talk about the fun, and it sparks off new stories. And you know, it's an old friend, but you've made a new one, like almost immediately. And there's something interesting about everyone. Everyone. They always say, you know, there's a book in everyone. And I do think that's true. It's just finding what the first chapter is. And sometimes you need to talk to someone else. And they need to ask you about your life. Because normally we don't have people who ask about our lives. Normally people either know about them or you just fall in with them at work. But you never have that chat. And I was having those chats with those people. I wanted to know what had happened, what was next, how they met their partner, whatever it was. And you'd find mad stuff, you know, that they didn't think was mad because it was just their life.
Yeah.
One of them thought he'd solved time travel. And that within about an hour I got to that. And I was like, well, there you go. That's now how I'm going to think of you for a little while. And then, I had my first kid, and I couldn't just get up and run off and, like with Join Me or Yes Man or friends like these, I couldn't just go to Japan to find an old school friend. I couldn't just go to Belgium to appear on a weird chat show. There was pasta to be made.
Yeah.
And, you know, people to be picked up from wherever. And so I thought, well, I still need to create something. So I decided to... I wanted to see if I could write a novel in the same way that I wanted to see if I could do a radio show, or I wanted to see if I could present a telly show. If the opportunity arises, even if you haven't done it before, the only way you're ever going to do it is if you do it. And that's the only way you'll find out. And no one who is now a novelist was a novelist before they'd written a novel. And no one who's a musician was ever a musician before they'd made some music. You've got to do that first thing. So the thing is, though, that I've tried to do that with lots and lots of different things. Because I feel like if I have the idea, it's all about the ideas, and if I feel like I have the idea that excites me, that might be enough to take me through to the end. So if it's a novel or whatever.
Yeah, like, to bring it back to F**** it's a very awkward name. I feel like there's probably a word.
I just call it there. F you very much.
Oh, yeah. You go with the F.
Yeah.
The asterisk is
I've always
silence.
Called it that, yeah. Okay. Unless I'm trying to be hip.
Oh, you go for the full-on swear.
Try and impress a barista.
I say the swear usually.
Yeah, good for you.
But yeah, so F you very much is a book based on that knob of an idea. It's an event that happens.
Yeah.
A harrowing
deeply,
event
challenging
in
event.
Your life.
Yeah.
But then you took that idea on.
Yeah.
Well,
part of my job is to notice things. And to think, is that, you know, useful? And anytime, I was writing a column every week for about 11 and a half, 12 years. And
that was with Shortlist.
That was with Shortlist. And the good thing about that was, if something bad happened to me, that was good. Anything bad that happened to me, I was like, great, it's actually solved a problem for me because I've got to write a column next week.
Yeah.
So that person who was rude to me in a cafe, or that guy who cut me up, or that guy who did this or whatever, as in cut me up in a car, I'm not talking about
not
street violence.
Yeah.
I was like, great, I can write about that. Now the challenge is to sort of make it funny or to say something that other people can relate to and to wrap it up and put a little bow on it and go, there's 800 words. And it's the same sort of principle with that book, for example. Something bad happened to me. I was the victim of some malicious customer service in a diner where a lady just seemed to take against me as I walked in with my little son trying to buy a hot dog. Those things are very easy to make, very easy to sell.
Even made to order.
Well, exactly. and this woman was insistent that I would have to wait a long time because every hot dog was cooked to order. And it didn't seem to me to be a good excuse, but I wasn't going to cause a fuss. So anyway, cut to 1 hour and 1 minute later, still no hot dog. I've been through the whole gamut of emotions. I'm trying to keep things light in the sleet outside, kind of going, it'll be there in a minute, honestly. But every time I go back in, she's angrier and angrier with me, until finally I am ejected from the diner for complaining, with coins thrown at me, and I'm scrabbling around undignified on the floor.
And of all the people in British media, you're one of the least likely to be ejected from a hot dog diner.
I hope so. I feel, you know, I'll take that as a compliment.
And you and Dimbleby, neither of you are getting kicked out for poor hot dog delivery.
Well, and yet, the evidence tells the opposite. And there it was. And it sent me mad for a couple of days because rudeness, as I discovered after, it messes with your brain. It literally messes with the frontal lobes of your brain, which means you can't concentrate in the moment. It's why you can't think of something funny to say when someone's really rude to you, usually. It's why you... I talked to a cab driver about it. He was asking me what I was up to, and I told him that. And he said it's the same with me. The other day he was outside a... he was driving past a pub, and some guy, drunk, just shouted, "Fuck you," at him. And he hadn't done anything wrong. It was just probably a dare or just a madman. And he was thinking about it, and he got so caught up, like 20 minutes later or something, he's in like Shoreditch going, "How did I get here and what am I doing?" He'd forgotten. He was like, he was just obsessed with it. And the same thing happened to me. But I realized that it chimed with all the work before, because I've always written about behavior, and I've always tried to write about what good behavior is and how we can all do it. And this, for me, this was an angrier book, because the more I read and researched about rudeness, kind of the angrier I became, which is natural because that happens to all of us. Mm. Even now, someone listening to this, listening to me talking about rudeness, it is affecting their neurological pathways.
Just the conversation. Just the conversation. Just hearing the word rudeness.
Just hearing me talk about that woman will make the person listening think about the last time someone was rude to them. Mm. And now it's like I've grazed them. And now their anger is closer to the surface than it would have been. So maybe later, listener, you'll get an email, and it'll just be a completely neutral email. And it's just someone going, "I just wondered when you're going to deliver that bit of work." And that's all it is.
How dare they wonder?
Exactly. Disturbing me in my spare time. Didn't even put a kiss at the end, or if they did, was that sarcastic?
It could have been.
That's what drives us all mad. And the more I wrote about it, the more I discovered it leads to some very, very dark places. So like you say, it starts off as quite a light, silly book, but it ends up, I hope, saying something.
There is, obviously, I think you lot should just listen to it on Audible or physically read it if you do that. I don't know.
Maybe people still do that.
I think some people do. I saw a guy with this pile of paper bound together on the tube earlier.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I'm not sure. He was kind of bending it.
Like a newspaper. An old
thicker,
newspaper.
More like a weapon.
Wow.
Sort of, you could damage someone with it.
Believe it or not. Pixar, it didn't happen.
But yeah, so there is a tone. You start, obviously, the first chapter is probably the sample chapter on Audible.
Probably.
I would have thought. But is about someone who joins ISIS.
Yeah.
It's like, it starts exactly as the book means to carry on. You are tackling something actually serious, but you can't help but find this funny. Like, he was so... He's a man who chooses to essentially kill as his reason for being.
Yeah.
He's so annoyed they keep unplugging his phone.
Exactly. Yeah, a 28-year-old former security guard from a Morrison's in Buckinghamshire. And one day he's like, "This is not for me. I want to be in the desert with my brothers, plotting the death of all Western civilization." And obviously I could do that here, but I think the desert's the place for me. So he goes out and everything's brilliant for a bit. This is exactly, you know, he's born for this. And he did a lot of training. But he just found himself not quite bonding with the other guys from ISIS. Mm. And he starts talking to a cat called Lucy, I think. And Lucy becomes his friend. And he finds himself just more and more separated from the other radical jihadist terrorists. And then he's serving them dinner one night. And they're like a bunch of kids, and they're all just going, over it, Omar, here, I want that now. And he said, I had to tell them all to just sit down and be quiet. And none of them cue. Sometimes if you're praying, they'll steal your shoes. They stare at me, and like you say, they had no respect for phone cable etiquette.
None at all.
But that for me was basically just going, we're all annoyed by the same stuff. We all get annoyed by rudeness. Mm. Whether you are a barista, dealing with a customer who's complaining that you gave them the wrong coffee, even though they had their earphones in the whole time and didn't even look at you, whether you are in customer services, or whether you're in ISIS, we all fundamentally want to be respected.
Mm.
And to not just be treated rudely in some way. I mean, I've got a different opinion about ISIS, I reckon. I think there's some bad guys with terrible ideas.
From what I can gather, yeah.
But me being me, if one was here now, I'd still sort of be polite.
Mm.
Just because there is that weird contrast. I'd say I don't approve of any of your stuff, but I wouldn't be swearing at them. It's a strange thing, just the social interaction.
It is such a strange thing that we are polite to people who have malicious intent.
Yeah.
Yet at the same time, it's what we've been raised to do.
Yeah.
You know? So
But otherwise the conversation would go nowhere. That's why like Twitter and stuff, it's like hit and run rudeness.
Mm.
Someone will come in, throw a brick at you.
I've said it before on here that it's dropping a hand grenade and just walking out the room.
And then they go off scot-free. And anything you do is then wrong. Whereas if you want to have the conversation, there are rules for the conversation.
Mm.
Otherwise, the other person will just get up and go.
Yeah.
If you want to engage, you have to engage.
So I have a neighbour who, for some months now, has been slowly dumping all his furniture on the street.
Oh,
and he's chosen the small piece of concrete outside my house his dumping ground.
Yeah.
And for a while, I didn't know who. And then in I saw at 2 o'clock in the morning.
No.
Him coming out with a double-seater sofa.
Uh-oh, that's too big for that little bit of concrete.
That's far too big.
Yeah.
So I waited, I watched, I didn't challenge, I didn't feel I was ready for that, and I wasn't dressed.
Your blood was pumping there, wasn't it?
It was, So I angrily waited quietly for 30 minutes until he'd gone back in, and I thought, maybe the exertion, he'll be asleep by now, it's late. And then I took that same double-seater sofa and wedged it in his doorway.
Good.
Like, got it right in there.
Good.
Oh, it was in there, and I went back in my house, and I got into bed, and then I got up immediately and went back across the road and took it out in case there was a fire.
Oh, well, good for you.
So it was still awkward, but no one dies.
But you look like a reverse burglar and then a burglar.
Right. It's in Nata.
That's bad behaviour from that person.
I know.
I had it's similar in that. We were selling our house in London and we were getting out, and then I just glanced out the window and through the blinds I saw our for sale sign wobbling, which is very odd. You know, it seemed to be wobbling to, there was a girth to it. It was kind of, you know, it wasn't a squirrel. And I looked and I saw someone suddenly walking off with the for sale sign. And I thought, well, that's a bit odd. And then my wife shouted, "Do you see that?" And I went, "What?" And I said, "What, the for sale?" And I assumed it was like the estate agent doing, putting a new one up.
Yeah.
But it was a rival estate agent nicking our for sale sign.
My word.
Because they wanted no one to know our house was for sale so that they could sell another house. Well, that got my blood pumping. Now I'm suddenly jumping in the car in my sort of pajamas, well, you know, like tracksuit bottoms, forgot my phone, and I'm just driving around the neighborhood just looking for this. I felt so good, like a detective. Couldn't find them. Then went to loads of estate agents. I parked outside Foxton's for a bit because I reasoned it was probably Foxton's.
It was probably Foxton's.
Then I went to other ones and I went in and I was sort of looking at them. And, you know, you have to sort of, if you're going to accuse someone of something, but I wasn't going to accuse them, but I was going to make my eyes do the accusing. So I was just walking in going, just to let you know, someone's going around stealing for sale signs. And these people are just looking at me like I'm insane. And I've got nothing else to say after that. And so I go back and I phone our estate agent and go, "We need to get another one up right now." So that'll get them. And then I find it and it's been dumped in a skip. So then I take it out of the skip, put it in my car.
Which has another level of rudeness because
doesn't it?
Somebody else is paying for that skip.
Ugh.
That's somebody else's skip. They might be putting hardcore in there. There's all sorts they could be
I need to find this person.
I know.
Anyway, so I
enlist them.
Yeah, but I get my For Sale sign back that I've got out of the skip, and I put it in the car, and I get it back to my house. I take it out, and I walk up, and our estate agent's already put a new For Sale. Now I've got two For Sale signs.
Well, it's double your chances, surely.
Well, you'd think so, but actually it just looked desperate.
It looked really needy.
Yeah,
no, I'm done by that one. They've got two. They've got double. How did you find writing a book like Fuck You Very Much? You took a breath there.
I was breathing in.
gonna
have to change the title. People think it's a swear word.
But it's a more research.
Yeah.
You know, in your earlier books are very much you living the research as such. Whereas this is you off around the world finding and talking to people who have done the work.
Yeah.
How did you find that?
I found it cathartic. And I found it exhilarating. And I found it educating. Or educational. I cared so much about the topic. I cared so much about finding the stuff out. I wanted to bring it to life. I wanted to go and meet the people. I wanted to find out what... You take this small idea and you realise, you think it's like a little bullet, and then you find out it's a bomb. Mm. Like, you think it's one thing, and then you find out the problem's much, much worse. And you become quite... it is. It's exhilarating kind of thing. And also, it was something that I could do largely by walking to my then office. I could still, you know, be a good dad.
Yeah.
And be around. But the stuff I was finding out was just completely fascinating to me. The kind of stuff that I could just sit in a pub with someone and let's say they didn't want to buy the audiobook, I would just tell them everything anyway, because I find it all really interesting.
Yeah.
And I would enforce that on people. Because fundamentally, we all have these stories and we all care about it.
Mm.
Like, it is a topic that we all care about. And even now that it's, you know, it's out, but it was maybe even frustratingly, it was maybe a year ahead of its time, in that whenever you listen to political discourse in America or in Britain or talk radio, say speech radio, there's a big conversation going on now about civility.
Mm.
And civility between us, civility between Remainers and Leavers, between Never Trumpers and Trumpists, between England and Scotland, between people on social media. We're at a time where it's just going wrong.
Mm.
And we're not doing that thing that we were talking about, sitting down and engaging and politely talking. We are all just shouting at each other and dropping those bricks or those hand grenades and then just running off because we think we're right.
With politics particularly, it isn't that long ago that we were having thinly veiled, at least, politicians at least trying to politely insult each other.
Yeah.
You know? Like, yeah. I'm going to insult you, but it's that moment of like, did he just, rather than at the moment where he's going, wait, no, that's racist.
Yeah.
You're not even trying to hide it at this point. And
well, everyone's found this sort of powerful voice, which is a good thing and a bad thing. The moment it started for me, I remember seeing David Cameron, you know, former Prime Minister. I'm no fan of his, but he was talking about this or that. A student on a TV show had asked him a question, and he got about 30 seconds into his answer, and then she just stood up or put her hand up and just went, "Look, Mr. Cameron, I'm an English student, so I'm pretty sure I know waffle when I hear it." And everyone sort of laughed and everything. But I remember being like, I laughed, but then I went, "Well, hang on." Because, you know, you like him or not, he's the Prime Minister. And you're doing this on TV.
Yeah.
And he can't hit back, you know, because he's the Prime Minister.
Mm.
And, you know, we're at a time where we're all talking about, well, you've got to respect the office of the President. And, you can respect previous presidents.
Mm-hmm.
But the office of the President right now is a dreadful, dreadful place. And yet, if he was here, I'd still, you know, engage with him in a reasonably kind of polite way, because that's the way I'm sort of made. And I think that you are, and I think it's kind of better. But I remember that moment, particularly in British politics, and thinking, it's going to change.
Mm.
You know, we're all going to be rude to these people, like face to face, which I think is dangerous.
There is.
I see Farage every week. I see Nigel Farage every week where I do a radio show, and I have the opportunity to speak to him.
Building, is
yeah.
it? Yeah. I think it hadn't even crossed my mind the many times I've been in Global. And
but I can't talk. I couldn't talk. I wouldn't talk to him.
No.
Because I wouldn't be able to do that. I wouldn't be able to do it politely.
Do you know the thing? I've said this before, that I like my racists to be racist, not to be greedy. Right. I prefer a good old-fashioned bigot to a bigot who's monetizing their bigotry.
Yeah.
I know. For some reason, I just find it galling.
Yeah.
You know, there was one of the MEP candidates who may or may not sexually assault someone.
Right.
I noticed just the other day that he was making about $18,000 a month on his right-wing version of
Patreon. I think I know, I was going to say the gentleman, but I know the toad of which he's speaking.
And it was like $18,000 a month. And it was like, it was more galling to me. That
he's not spending it on clothes. That's the most polite thing I can say.
Just, no one say it didn't fit. Yeah. That suit, just a little, or bigger or smaller, either direction.
Yeah.
But just not that awkward,
choose a look,
awkward bit. Yeah. But you know what I mean? It's like it is really frustrating when you see people who are benefiting greatly, like your Farages, from stirring up hate.
Yeah.
You know, and it is interesting that if you get vitriolic on Twitter and you say something crass and edgy, which I do regularly, it gets more likes and it gets more retweets, and you're getting, but you say something genuinely positive, like, I heard this album, it was beautiful, da 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 da, and it's just like those balls of hair. Well, they're called tumbleweeds.
Yeah.
They're not of hair at all, but I can't remember what they were.
Yeah.
But you know,
sticks or something? I don't know what they are. Well, weeds probably.
Weeds.
Yeah.
Are they dead? Or are they like
They're not sentient. They're not on their way somewhere.
No, but I mean, are they like rolling around and then when they stop, do they...
Oh, I see.
Reroute?
I don't know. Oh, yeah, that's true.
That's your next book.
That's the book, guys.
Just following one tumbleweed's journey across America.
All I have to do is stand up in a desert and tell a joke. Tell a bad joke and all the tumbleweed come out.
It's been just this one stuck against the cactus for 3 days and you're waiting for it to move.
Yeah.
If the wind changes, we can move on. But yeah, no, I get het up with politics sometimes, and I think we all do.
Yeah.
But it's that thing, the rudeness, we don't have to inflict our anger on other people.
No.
But what you talk about in the book is how it's infectious, and I think the same goes for anger as well as rudeness.
It is. The scientists have shown that it literally spreads the same way as the common cold. So it can spread throughout an office. And people don't let it go. People take it home with them. And then they are snappier with their partners because it's harder to switch off when that thing is going around in your head the whole time. Maybe you'll drink more. Maybe you'll sleep less. Maybe your partner, because you've been rude to them, will take it to their office. So the only way to properly end it is to suck it up and end the strain. Or to be aware of it as well, to understand it, what's happening, or when someone's really rude to you, to think about what might have made them that way. And it's difficult to do. It's almost impossible. You have to train yourself to do it. So I try with the book.
Apologies about the noise, but we're in a rambunctious spot that shouldn't be rambunctious, but this is life.
Yeah, I'll explain where we are. We're in a sort of a big black room with painted on neon lasers down one side.
Fake. It's a lie.
They
are lie lasers.
A light-up dance floor, and we're sitting beneath a disco ball.
And I think maybe this room...
And this is your kitchen.
This is my kitchen.
Wow.
This is one of those rooms you should never see with real lighting.
No, exactly.
You know?
You know how disappointing it is when they turn the lights on at Quasar?
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm not on board an alien starship.
So my partner, 43-year-old woman... she loves Quasar.
Yeah, loves good.
To the point where her son is now 15. He is growing out.
Right.
Quasar. Is he 16, Andrea? Tell me when you hear this.
Yeah. Just edit it in.
I should know. But yeah, she loves it. But the problem is, she'll take him, and because the way they do it in America is you, it's like time. So there's like you play strangers. You're not booking it out.
No.
It's a league and all that, and they go around demolishing it. And then there's like 80-year-old children just walking out there crying.
Yeah.
And so she's like, "We won."
Yeah.
Calm.
Yeah.
Breathe.
Yeah.
Breathe. But I think she likes it because she's quite tattooed.
Uh-huh.
And they usually use a lot of UV.
Oh, so she's just little bits, different bits of it light up.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Which she, you know, that's the only reason to get tattooed is for UV lighting.
Oh, which, someone just scored 50. I think they beat the base.
Or someone died. One of the two.
Oh.
It could be either way. So to talk about, you've been doing this a while.
Yeah.
You know, to have done so much. But you, for a time, worked as a producer.
Yeah.
So we've talked about your voice, but before that, you were helping people find their voice.
Yes.
So how do you miss that? Like, obviously, you played a big part in getting the Mike Booch on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Do you miss taking that part in helping other people find their voice? Or are you doing secret stuff? Is that something you still do? But
no, well, I can still switch that on if, say, I'm seeing an early preview of an Edinburgh show, something like that. Then if it's someone I know and they want to hear it, they want to talk about it, I can look at their... I'm quite sort of adaptable in my sense of humour, I think, I hope. So I could think of something for the Boosh or maybe something that might give Ross Noble some ideas or different sort of styles, and I can kind of write in those styles as well. So it's I quite enjoy sometimes sitting down with someone who thinks in a different way, and you know, offering some thoughts if they want it.
Yeah.
You know, or then maybe there's a really obvious joke that they missed. By obvious, I just mean there's a chasm there, and there's a laugh to be had, and maybe this could fit. And that side of it, I do enjoy. What I didn't enjoy was really the kind of the office nature of it. I remember being in an office at BBC Broadcasting House, and I was at the tail end of those times, those legendary BBC producer times, where you just went to the pub. You had an 11 o'clock meeting and you went, let's just go to the pub. You'd stay there throughout lunch and you'd go home about 10:30. I still did that a couple times.
Yeah.
And I remember coming up with ideas that we thought were absolute genius with Julian Barrett from the Boosh. And, oh, we had the title, we had everything. It was going to be great. And the next morning reading it and just going, this is appalling. And calling him and going, you know, it was appalling, right? He's like, yeah, I thought it might be appalling. Yeah. But it was the process that was enjoyable. But I remember a couple of comics coming into my office and we were throwing this idea around and we were laughing. And someone banging on my door and another producer just then, not waiting to be asked to come in, just bursting in and going, can you stop laughing? And I remember just thinking, this is the comedy department.
Yeah, your department was comedy, yeah. Right?
You don't want silence in this department. If there is no one laughs at anything in this department specifically, I mean, if
it's
this was
the one department where it should be happening.
If this was the obituaries department,
well,
I would understand. But it's comedy, and we should be swapping ideas and saying surprising things and catching each other off guard, and that will then translate to something good. And I think that was one of the moments where I went, maybe this isn't for me. I loved the BBC. I loved the guy I was working for, John Pidgeon. It was just brilliant, and we just thought alike, and he liked the same people I liked, and we did everything we could to give those people a voice. But then it was time for me to go and not give ideas away all the time, but just kind of, if I had an idea that I thought was good, maybe rather than giving it to someone else, I would go, well, maybe I'll try that.
So, like, when you came up with maybe having a mooch with Graham Gooch, you kept that for yourself?
Yeah.
I think you're still...
I'm still looking for funding.
Okay.
But I'm pretty close. The little chef's on board.
The one little chef that they got, Heston Blumenthal.
Yeah, that one, exactly.
That one. I went there.
Did you?
Yeah.
When it was a Heston one.
When it was a Heston one.
Why didn't they call it Heston Services?
I don't know. Why didn't they put it at Heston Services?
Exactly. I mean, that's an open goal.
Is it popular or somewhere?
Yeah.
Wasn't popular. It began with a P. Google it or use Ask Jeeves. The higher class of searching.
Yeah, you just get better results, posher results.
Microsoft called Bing because they wanted people to say Bing it.
Oh, did they?
And that failed abysmally. Because who says Bing it?
No one says Bing it.
Google it. It has...
Oh, everyone loves to Google it.
Oh, Google
it's really caught on.
Well, I was at a wedding once. Me and Pip were at this wedding, and this guy was like talking about YouTube. And he's like, yeah, this is this great video. So, yeah, we go to Google. Have you got Google? Yeah, we've got Google. Yeah, and type in youtube.com. I'm just like,
brilliant.
I could have just put it in the top bar and got there one step quicker, but we'll keep talking.
First time I ever used the internet, I was working for a magazine company in Bath, or Bath, as the people of Bath call it.
Is this post-Sega Power?
Yep, post-Sega Power. I'd gone freelance. Well, had I? Or maybe
how old were you when you started Sega Power?
When I was at Sega Power, I was probably like, I don't know, 13, 14 maybe.
Which is insane. When you think about it.
Well, that was, I was still at school, but I was getting, you know, when they started to pay me, that was nuts.
Yeah.
Because I was getting money for playing games, which I would have done for free anyway.
Mm.
And I was getting money to write for magazine, which I would have done for free anyway, and had been doing. Anyway, after all the guys at Sega Power moved on, which was a Sega magazine, all about games and that, they then joined different magazines. And so suddenly, I had all these different opportunities to write about different things. And when the internet was hitting big, they thought, obviously, as a magazine company, well, how do we cope with the internet? And rather than thinking, let's put a magazine on the internet, they thought, let's write a magazine about the internet. And so it was called the Net Directory. It was really well written, but it was basically reviews of websites. So it'd just be like, you turn a page, and it would just be, here are... And it was before everyone had, like, a .com.
Mm.
So it would be like the Eddie Izzard fan page. And it would be like, www.eddie.115533-... And it went on for days. Anyway, they said to me, do you want to write a thing? And I hadn't used the internet. And I went, okay, yeah, so what do I do? And I had to go into an office and phone a man and go... All right, I'm on your computer, what do I do? And he said, right, click that thing there. And so I clicked it, and this thing came up. And I went, now what? And he went, now you can see, you've got to write something out, and that you click on that. So I clicked on it, and I said, what do I write? And he said, H, T, P, colon. And I was like, which one is colon? \\, and then this really, and I just thought, this is so much hassle. There is no way.
This is never going to work.
This is so... How are you supposed to remember HTTP, you know, \\\?
Well, like, before we had search engines, like, the first booms of websites were lists of websites.
Websites
were just lists.
Everyone's website had to have a links page.
The links page was classic.
Yeah.
It's a really odd thing about the links page, because I actually really like representing other people. I think it's something we can all do as creators. Of we've got an audience, and we get an opportunity to say to them, "Check this guy out."
Yeah,
and I don't think we do it enough.
No, not anymore.
It's weird because
it's like retweeting is a kind of form of that.
Yeah,
but it's quite selective, and it's a strange thing to know because you're thinking of your audience. It's a weird thing.
On to everyone else, this won't be the last episode. It'll be the one before. I did talk about how. Retweet means more than like.
Oh yeah,
means something to the algorithm.
Yeah,
but hitting retweet is like showing the world that you care enough.
Yeah, I like this person and I like what they're saying. But it's become this weird commitment. It's like the school thing.
It's like one step. I now have to engage this and I might have to defend it as well.
Yeah.
That's rubbish, Dan. No, it's not.
Yeah.
You know, but I can't just write, no, it's not. If you hear the key change, it sounds I'm not that guy.
And then 3 a.m, they wake up and you're shoving a sofa in their doorway.
Well, they know I've been there.
Yeah.
What I've learned now is to shove a fire extinguisher in just before the sofa so I don't have to then take it out again.
Oh, you got to have a plan.
For responsibility. We've covered a fair amount, but there's a bit more if you've got time.
Yeah, let me see. Yeah,
what time have you got to go up?
Yeah, well, if it's up to you. Like, I've got to get back to do this phone call at Leicester Square, but I've got another, 10-15.
Okay, well, no pressure, Dan. No pressure. Let's just quit now. Too much stress.
No. Yeah.
Okay.
I could probably do 20, if I can get back.
Yeah, so listen to the audiobooks.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that adaptation? Like, so you, one of the few people whose books I've listened to, who actually pays attention to the fact that it's going to be heard, not read.
Yeah.
Is that something you've always done? Or do you feel like you're channeling your radio self when you do that?
So give me an example. If I'm reading it out and I mention that it's that this is an audio book, or if I address the listener, or I do a little bit of extra stuff.
Yeah, within the text that you're reading.
Yeah.
It's
like a natural, I don't plot it out. The key to a lot of stuff in life is to listen. Mm. Like you do, doing an interview, you listen to the person. You don't just go straight to your next thing.
Mm.
It's a conversation, and those are the best things.
One of the podcasts I listen to, I'm not going to name them, it really felt like the way they edited it made it sound like they weren't listening.
Right.
And I could tell that they were listening because they faded up and you could just catch that you'd had a little jokey bit.
Right.
So there was obviously a conversation there. But their edit was basically you say your thing and then they would go, oh, yeah, great. and in the book you talk about this. Can you tell me about that?
Right.
And
yeah.
they would just link with, can you tell me about that?
Yeah.
And it was just like, guys, just give us the conversation.
Yeah. I mean, you get used to that. And then you go, all right, you just want me to do a little, two-minute bit about this and two-minute bit about that. But listening is key. And also listening to what you're saying, how it comes across. Again, there's a thing that we all do. And it's called the looking glass self, and it's like a constant MOT that we do. So every time we talk to someone, we're looking at them and sort of, on some level, we're gauging how we're coming across to them.
Yeah.
And I think I'm too paranoid about that sometimes, because I want to get on with people, and I want to give them what they need, and I want, that to go. And it's sort of similar when you're recording, say, an audiobook, on a different level, but you want them to be engaged and you want them to feel that this is for them. And it's not just me reading out a book.
Mm.
This is now a different experience. This is me, the author of the book, telling you the stuff in the book, but I'm going to do some of it conversational because that's how I would do it if we were in the pub. There's going to be other bits where I have to be a bit more, formal. But when the opportunity arises, I'll drop in the fact that I know it's me and you and that you are listening and that I am talking. And I think that makes it a better, more satisfying thing for them.
Yeah.
Little tiny touches is all it takes. But it's just to kind of go, I'm not being lazy. I know I'm sitting in a place reading, but I'm doing it for you.
Mm.
And I hope you like it.
Is that why you didn't do the narration for the novel?
Yeah.
Because that needed to...
It needed to be someone else. Yeah. And it needed to be... I didn't want people to get confused by... Because the novels are written first person.
I suppose you've got all this factual,
real
world stuff. You don't want them thinking, wait, he did what?
Yeah. He stalked a woman.
When did all this happen? Yeah. I saw him on the telly.
Yeah, so I wanted to make that a different experience. And so I would then just be the author. I wouldn't be the storyteller, if you like.
Mm.
But with the kids' books, I tell you, with some of the early audiobooks as well, there's a moment you can tell, especially when they used to come on CD, because with a grown-up book, I always say grown-up rather than adult, because people might think I write different things. With a grown-up book, that usually takes about 2 days. So, but it's also, you're just in a room, and it's hot, and there's no windows, and you just read it, and there's a moment about 5 hours in where you're like, don't stumble, don't make a mistake, because you sort of want to get out of there, because you want to refresh for tomorrow. But how you refresh is you go to the first pub you can. So I always remember with some of the early ones, CDs 1 and 2 would sound perfectly normal. And CD3 would just start with a very deep-voiced man who was clearly starting recording at 9:30 in the morning, very hungover.
Yeah.
And it's, I always wondered what people thought. Kind of, what's happened to his voice in that one moment? Because they're just... With the kids' ones, I've learned not to commit too early to a character's voice. Because I'll just get there and go, all right, what do I think this person sounds like? And then I'll do a crazy voice. And then I realise, I've got 8 hours of this. Yeah. And I've got to do that every time.
So when I was streaming on Twitch more regularly, I'd play a lot of older RPGs, uh-huh. like Final Fantasy and Chrono Trigger.
Yeah.
And Final Fantasy VII, like reading all those different characters, basically every time Barrett came on stream, I'd basically committed to a racist voice, which I had to gradually like tone out. There's a character called Red 13,
okay.
which is like a half cat. Human.
Oh.
So he had like a schnarf,
yeah.
but like very excitable schnarf. Oh my god. My voice was wrecked.
Yeah, of course it would be.
Just, I'm like, why have I done this?
In the last one I did, one of the characters had an accent.
Mm.
And then I realised I couldn't do that accent. So I was like, why the hell did I write that? So I ended up just ad-libbing as I described the character and just saying, he had a light accent. Which I don't believe is what was in the book, but I was just like, you know, okay, that's going to save everybody a lot of trouble.
Just that one. No, I'm bailing on this.
Yeah.
It's only kids.
Yeah.
How do you find that writing the kids' books?
Oh, it's fun.
They've been massively successful as
well. They've done well, I think. I mean, not on the same scale as of some of those guys, but they've been successful in the sense that they've sold some copies and. The kids who are into them are super into them, and they ask me lots of questions I don't know the answer to.
Yeah,
then I have to ad lib an
answer.
So you've
not done like a George R. R. Martin world building document.
No,
you haven't. The canon is flexible.
Let's just say the world builds with every new book, rather than I have to refer to any sort of, you know. But it's been great. I mean, the first I'd never done an event in front of kids before. And so I was a bit kind of like, you know, I think instinctively I know how to do it. I've got kids. I've certainly seen kids. I was once a kid. So I think I've got this. And then they said...
You've run the gamut of kid...
Yeah, I've done all the kid stuff. And they said, the first one's in, where was it? Barnsley? Wakefield? Somewhere like that. And they said it's up there. And I went, great, let's go do it. And they went, it's quite a big one. And I went, oh, cool, great. And when I got there, I mean, they told me... But when I got there to see it with my own eyes, I realised, well, God. And it was like half a football stadium full of children. Not there just for me. I was just on the bill.
Yeah.
But that was me, like a trial by fire of trying to hold the attention of, what, 1,000 kids or something, all of them miles away.
Yeah, yeah.
on a very bleak, cold morning. And just, I'd said, can I bring like, there's a little, some pictures I could put on a screen, thinking they'll put a screen up. And they went, oh, we've got a screen, but it was a screen at the other end of the stadium. So it would be like looking at a television about a quarter of an inch high. So I'm trying to make this interesting. Anyway, after that, I was like, no more. I'm not a stadium author. I'm a backroom of the library guy. And then, you know, it was all good after that. But it's been great.
I don't think there's a lot we need to go through. The one thing, through your work, there's a lot about trying to either change your world or change the world.
Yeah.
And it doesn't always seem deliberate. It's not like you've woken up and gone, yes, I'm going to... But how does it feel to look at things you've done and see that you have made... When you eventually pass away at 125 or whatever, you will have left a world in a better place... Well, you won't have made it worse if you like. The world's not going to be in a better place. But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, do you feel awed by that? Does it intimidate you to have, like, with the Carmageddon stuff?
It doesn't intimidate me. Light. It makes me, I never really think about that stuff much, but if ever it crosses my mind, and I only mean on, like, that's if I get an email, say, or a letter, and I still get amazing letters. And amazing emails from the very early stuff as well. And they're such good stories. And they're so kind of well told. And they tell them to me like we are friends, which is you know, what I want. And, you know, now that I walk into these rooms with so many faces of people who've been, say, with Join Me from the very start, but there's still new faces. And crucially, off to one side, there is a room full of children who were born because of Join Me, because of these people finding each other through the book or whatever. Like, I can't take credit for that. I'm a catalyst or a cog. But they had to read it. It had to chime with them. They then had to make an effort to go to a place. They then had to speak to someone new.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff they did to make that happen. But I'm involved somehow. And, you know, a kid was born recently and the middle name was Wallace. I get in.
After Wallace and Gromit.
Yeah, big fans. And there's an amazing story a lady told me just about, she, her kids had all grown up and her husband had the classic midlife crisis where they were supposed to now just enjoy each other's company, but he started enjoying the company of someone younger and bought the cliched car and, you know, started jogging, got a fake tan. And she was just like, who is this, you know, dickhead? But was still with him and then realized she didn't need to be. And also she didn't need to do the job she was doing until she retired.
Yeah.
And so she changed it all up and she started saying yes to everything. And she went out and, cut a long story short, met the guy that was right for her. He was brilliant. They've gone on so many adventures together.
Yeah.
She is so happy in her work. She's having a great time.
Mm.
And maybe she'd have done that anyway. And I hope that she would, because, you know, it might be a, you either curl up and die after someone does that to you, or you embrace life. And she'd read the book and she said that that helped her, but I hope that she'd have done it anyway.
Yeah.
But I do feel awed sometimes by these things, but I try not to think about them too much, because I think I get overawed.
I think it's something that we, maybe other people need to think about occasionally, that there is this butterfly effect of lives. Like,
oh, yeah.
You could really say, you could drag your life all the way back to your parents moving to Bath, being a point in time where if you'd never moved to Bath, maybe you would never worked at Sega Power.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Never got into journalism.
Oh, totally. Got
into, do you know what I mean? And that butterfly effect is...
Well, it's all, you know, it's all moving forward is saying yes. And, you know, yeah, you can trace back all the brilliant things that have happened in your life to a yes, you know.
Mm.
All the things, all the connections that need to be made. You need to be in that place at that time to meet that person. And that person might not have been there that day unless that person had said, it's incredible, the sort of the complexity of life and chance and coincidence. And my thing is, if we have all these rules, what if we change one rule in our own life? What if we decide to just do something nice for a complete stranger, even though everything in our psyche is screaming, don't do it, it'll be awkward, they'll think you are a religious nut or something. You don't want to go to that party tonight. I understand. It's going to be boring. And you don't even like half the people there. And you have to change trains twice and then come home. But what if you do?
Yeah.
You know, who might you meet? You're as likely to meet the love of your life at a bad party as at a good one. In fact, one of the producers of Yes Man, this incredible woman, the film, she was single all the time I knew her. And then she decided, while working with me, she just went, do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to a bad party. And she went to this bad party, and it was bad. It was like the other side of town. All the dips were warm by the time she got there.
Warm
and
dips?
She, yeah.
Sorry, I'm like, well, I'm uncomfortable already.
And she's sitting at this table, and she's talking about some old film star from like 1920s. And this gravelly voice just goes, I've been waiting my whole life for a girl like you to say a thing like that. And it was like old school Hollywood sort of. And he sat down, and now they're married and they have a child. And it was just that moment, you know, and she just needed to do that in her life. So yeah, for me, it's about changing rules or creating rules and seeing what happens, but never knowing what the philosophy is going to be until you've lived it.
And trying to remember, like trying to make sure you never think about the fact that there's plenty of people who've had sex because you exist.
That no, I think about that a lot. That's the only thing I think about.
I think that's where we should end. As I talked way more about other things than I should, can you just apologise to Mike Bithell? Because I was going to bring up Thomas Was Alone and the voice acting and
sure.
stuff. And I feel like he was our first ever guest.
I know, yeah. I'm sorry about that, Mike Bithell, or as he calls himself, Biffikins.
Biffikins.
You know, we didn't get to talk about you. But, you know, you're talking about yourself a lot these days, in a good way.
With the John Wick video game.
With the John Wick video game. Let's not tell Dan what happened there, Mike, with the John Wick video game. You and I both know, don't we?
Uh-oh.
Yeah, you and I both know. And then, what was it, 2-3 days before the announcement? Is that what it was, Mike? So it's probably lucky that we're not talking about Mike Bithell right now, because he owes me big time.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Does he? Right, we won't get into that. Have you ever been tempted to make something like that? I know, obviously,
a video game?
Yeah, you voice acted a lot.
I couldn't make Snakes and Ladders. But I wouldn't mind making a genuinely funny video game.
Well, Mike's good at licensed stuff. Maybe
yeah.
a Hamish
game. Well, he does, like I say, he does owe me.
He does owe you. So.
Hey, look at that. Wasn't it good? Danny's a good one, isn't he? When I said at the start I felt positive, I did. I came out of that just with a spring in my step. I got a lot done for the next couple of days. I think that just say yes thing, not strictly saying yes to every little thing in the world, but being open to the idea of something happening is definitely a worthwhile approach to life. We got that from the Dan Hare episode as well, that say yes attitude leading you down interesting paths. And they don't always have to be good paths or wonderful paths, but if you're saying no, generally you're not leaving your house. And that is definitely something I am very guilty of, looking at myself right now, it being, I don't know, 8 o'clock on a Sunday night and I'm still not dressed. Don't worry, I'm going to shower directly after this and I'm going to smell fresh as a daisy. Well, I've got lemon sauce, so I'm going to smell fresh as a lemon. Which will be nice, I think, unless you don't like lemons. If you don't like lemons, don't smell me. Basically, I often smell of lemons. Or mint. Or lemon and mint. If I'm right at the end of a bottle and the start of the next bottle, maybe one armpit will smell of lemon and another will smell of mint. So yeah, it's up to you if you sniff me. What were we talking about? But yeah, Danny's great. Definitely check out his book, F You Very Much. Just check out everything he's ever written, basically. Check out his radio show, The Important Broadcast, on Radio X. And yeah, just show the man some support. And talking of support, thank you everyone who retweets the podcast and does all that stuff. Presses like and share and all those things. It means a lot. Getting past the algorithm, getting anyone to notice these things in this day and age is becoming increasingly difficult. So yeah, all those little things help and it means a lot. If you want to review this podcast within your favorite podcast app, do it for your own sake. You know, it's not just for me, it's for you. You want other people to know how cool you are that you listen to this podcast, basically. And Patreons, as ever, I can't do it without you. You are literally the only reason I get to continue doing this, so thank you. That's patreon.com/DanLesac to get a little plug in. And yeah, next week I did a little line before the episode saying hang around at the end to find out who's up next week. I do not know. I was meant to record one in Brighton just a few days ago, and at the very last minute, they had to cancel on me. I know. Don't they know? I was going to put them in front of literally tens of people. So, I don't know. There is someone someone local to me who we've been talking about doing it for a little while. So, I don't think we're going to have a gap. There is someone of interest to you and to me, but we will see. It's August anyway, you're all busy. It's sunny out there, except when it's not. Keep an eye on Twitter and stuff for when the next episode will be. Patreons, obviously, you get told in advance. You get to hear the secrets of who's coming to Dan's house. Wait, that made no sense. I go to their houses. I am rambling. So, I'm going to go. Check out the music on danlesack.bandcamp.com. I've already talked about Patreon 900 times. I'm not desperate, honest. And thank you all in advance for spreading the good word. And I will see you on the next episode. Bye. Did I need to say bye there? I feel like I could have just ended it on next episode. But it felt like rude to not say goodbye. Well, now I've added this bit, so... And this bit. And this bit. I actually scripted all of this. And this bit. I scripted this bit as well. And this bit. Yep. This bit. That yep thing. That was scripted. And this bit. And this bit. And this bit. And now it's fading out. Or it might have been fading out for a little while yet. I haven't decided that yet. That wasn't scripted. But the words were scripted. This was all scripted. Honestly. And this bit. 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 And that one.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your $1 a month trial today at shopify.com/records.